Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Monday morning. It is the 14th of May, and hopefully you all had a lovely Mother's Day weekend. And for those who celebrated, I hope you had a lovely Mother's Day. And for those of you who didn't, I hope you were lovely to your mothers and
all of that stuff.
All that ensues there. But we welcome you and we thank you very much for being with us this morning. We let me introduce the panel as they make their way into the studio. First, we welcome communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois is with us. Good morning, Teresa. How are you?
Good morning. Doing well, thanks.
And another guy with that title of communications consultant, Joe Bonilla, is here. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Joe. How are you?
I am okay. How are you?
Fantastic. Wonderful weekend here in Albany. We had Tulip Festival here. A little rain, but yesterday was a wonderful day for Mother's Day. Full of sunshine. It was great.
It was. Yeah, it was a lovely day. Beautiful, beautiful day. Alan Chartok is here as well. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Hi, Big Joe.
Good to see you.
Good to be seen.
Excellent. Good way to put it. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we would love to hear from you. Isn't it about time? You want to write? We have a lot to talk about. A lot going on in the news, a lot going on in the world, and we will find out about all that as we start this morning. The big story, of course, is a tragic one. Israel kills at least 28, although that number, I think, has gone up to 37. At least there's varying reports. As Palestinians try to cross the border, this is a mass attempt by Palestinians to cross the border. Fence separating Israel from Gaza quickly turning violent as Israeli soldiers responded with rifle fire. At least 1,000 Palestinian demonstrators were also wounded in the Gaza protests, which spread to the West Bank in opposition to the relocation of the U.S. Embassy, which opens today. And that is an occasion where the president has sent his daughter and his son-in-law, Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner, to that event. And on Israel's 70th anniversary, the U.S. Embassy moves to Jerusalem, but it does come in a moment so fraught that as Israelis seem not to know what exactly to feel. And we are seeing some very powerful, horrible images coming across our television screens this morning, and of course, hearing them on the radio. So we will start there this morning. And I guess, Alan, a lot of this could have been anticipated as far as some of the violence, as this had been going on for almost a month.
I apologize.
That's all right.
That was my fault.
Yeah. That's all right. Well, it wasn't your fault. You didn't call yourself.
No, but I didn't turn off the phone, Big Joe.
All right, now you got me worried. Let me go turn mine off.
See?
You answer the
Mine's
question, and I'll turn my
purpose.
Phone off. Go ahead.
Right. Anyway.
On behalf of all of us, Alan, thank you.
That's right.
So, look, I am so disturbed by this that I am frankly depressed by this Israeli thing. As an American Jew who has always believed strongly in the state of Israel and its right to exist, this bothers me. It bothers me that Netanyahu has so firmly gotten in bed with political bed with Trump, and that when they open this thing up, Trump has aggravated things by getting two pastors with a history of anti-Muslim, frankly anti-Semitic, anti-Mormon talk, and he puts them at the beginning and the end of this. And you say to yourself, well, why is he doing that? It seems so inappropriate, so stupid. Because, as I have said 1,000 times on this show, it's all the base. It's always the base. And this is the evangelical base that he wants to show off for. We know what... Well, go ahead, Joe. I see you want to say something.
No, I'm curious. I don't disagree with you. I think you're absolutely right. I'm just wondering, given the complexity of this situation, of how much, and I'm not disparaging the base as far as their intellectual capacity, but I'm just wondering about just the base in general of how aware they are of the complexity of the situation.
Teresa?
I'm just, is this the bass or is this Adelson? Isn't this
no,
just
no,
a
I think
to Adelson?
This is the evangelical bass. In other words, you get somebody who comes...
I didn't
comes
mean to interrupt your question, Joe. I'm sorry.
No, I you can bring them all together.
But my feeling is more with Teresa's, though. I think this is more as a favor back to Sheldon Adelson rather than the evangelical base in that regard.
I would call it a payoff, payback after, you know, the contributions.
The movement of... See, I don't agree with you guys. I think the movement of the... embassy is Adelson, no question.
No, that's what I meant.
Putting these guys at the beginning and the end, pastors beginning and the end,
absolutely,
who take every opportunity to insult Jews, insult Muslims, insult you know anybody who isn't them.
But how do we
even
get there? I mean, why even move it and start this and what is the I mean, isn't there a part of this, it seems that we've been saying this a lot lately, but there's a part of this that this is precipitated simply because it was something that Obama wouldn't do.
Well, it may be, but it's also something that Bush wouldn't do. Each of these presidents has talked about Jerusalem.
Both Bushes.
I don't know whether that's because, this is part of the Judeo-Christian politics of this country. I don't know. It may be. But and it may be that they're committed to that as an idea. But this is really going to end up very, very badly, and that's clear.
Predictable.
Yeah. And predictable. He knew what he was going to get. But then he goes and he puts gasoline on the fire with these guys who come before and afterwards.
But... do you think he has a plan beyond the opening of the... I mean, do you think that there's some... not just he, Trump, but the Trump administration. This just doesn't seem part of a larger plan around what to do.
I think he has a plan.
Israelis.
I think his plan is that he's a warmonger.
Well, I think that's part of the plan, but I really don't believe there is a long-term plan. I mean, we've seen this in every single instance with this president and this administration. There's no real long-term planning. It's for the optics and for the initial boost, whatever that could be.
But this goes in, if you put this in with the Iran of pulling out of the Iran agreement, and you put all of this together I don't exactly say knee-jerk reactions, because they were what he said he was going to do during the campaign. But to Alan's point, I mean, you wonder if it's just stirring it up for a turbulent war situation.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it, but also is anything that President Obama did, he wants to undo. I think that's only the only real modus operandi of this president. And you look at the last three presidents, from the Jerusalem Embassy Act that was passed in 1995 that was not signed by President Clinton, and every single president did not act on this. This is the one thing that President Trump can look to say, well, actually fulfilled his promise. But again, is there a real plan? I really don't think so. But to Alan's point, I think this is only really to shore up the base and increase the base's awareness of maybe this possible war down the road.
I don't think it's so far down the road.
No.
Well, down the road could be this week.
There are reportedly between 1,000 and 2,000, depending on what media you're reading, Palestinians who've been shot, 37 dead today. But this is on top of more than 30 dead in the last 3 weeks. It's just it's predictable and horrible and unnecessary.
So now the issue becomes, what happens with Iran? What role are they going to play in this? Are we going to see a multitude of actions around the globe in which people do things that are really going to hurt embassies, United States embassies, other embassies, and are we going to see that playing out? And I want to go back to what I just said. Since he is not afraid of war, is there a scenario here we could look at that creates an Iran U.S. confrontation as a result of throwing gasoline on the fire this way?
Well, I think it's not just gasoline, but obviously the tinder's there. But I think that's what we're looking at. And we look at just this mishmash of foreign policy overall. And this is just another example of that. and we look at, obviously, the president's going to be, you know, meeting with the leader of North Korea, you know, Kim Jong-il, you know, and later in June. And again, what could come of that? So this is, again, just another example of just how irresponsible this administration really is.
First of all, I certainly agree with you. But second of all, I think that those of us who really are so depressed about Trump and what he has managed here have to recognize he's going to get credit for the North Korean thing. He will. That will be seen as a foreign policy success by him.
If it goes well, right? If it actually happens, too.
I mean, we hope that it does go well, but it's just
I'll
so
accept the
early.
Amendment. I'll accept the if, but right. I think it's going to happen. And I think they've...
But what's going to happen, Alan?
No, I think there's going to be...
What's going to happen?
Yeah.
Is North Korea going to give up its nuclear weapons?
Yes. I think they are.
In what universe is that going to happen?
I think they will, because I think they've got
Why would they do that?
They've got a guarantor in China. And China is saying, you got to do this. We like our role in the world. You can't get in our way. But don't worry. They have given us assurances. And, of course, part of the problem here is we don't know a thing about what's going on in the background. But I do believe that those people who are unwilling to see that Trump gets any benefit out of this is, you know, are just misguided, because it's not the right wing, it's not the 30%, it's the people in the middle who are going to count. Now, it's not Alan Chartok who is telling you, I believe in this. Yeah,
but I mean, I think all of us would want. I mean, if anyone can broker a peace and can take nuclear weapons out of North Korea, then God bless you and let it happen.
Exactly.
No matter who it is. but I think it just. I mean, on one hand, we have people ready to give him the Nobel Prize for this, and we don't even know what's going to happen there yet. He himself has says, you know, I'm perfectly willing of walking out of the meeting if they say anything I don't like. And then on the other hand, you have what's going on here in Jerusalem, and you just wonder, well...
And not to mention what's happening in Yemen and what's happening in Syria.
And this is to your point before, Alan. I mean, do you think that... I forget, you brought up the point, but it was a question of, you know, the plan. And you know, I would feel much better if you thought that the State Department, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, everybody sat down and figured out, well, when we do this with North Korea, and this is going to affect this in Israel, and we're going to do this in Yemen, and this is going to... But it doesn't seem...
Look, Joe, Trump is a bully. We know that. It's basic to his character that he is a bully. And he thinks that if he keeps bullying people and nations, he's going to get credit for that. People are going to be scared of him, and they're going to do what he wants. That's what I think the game plan is here.
But my worry is that these decisions are all episodic, not strategic. Yep. And that, you know, you could have a leader who's a bully who could be effective if they see the whole world, you know, as a, you know, the chess, the whole table or the whole whatever it is, you know, but to me, the concern is that these decisions, like to open this embassy, are episodic and not part of a larger strategic plan. And you also, and I know we'll get to it later, but you see this decision over the weekend by Trump, or this to say that we're going to back off on this telecom issue. And to me, that sends some pretty strong signals as he's going to negotiate, which would be very difficult negotiations in North Korea. He immediately backs down when things get hard and the negotiations with China. And so what kind of signal does that send about how strong his negotiating tactics are when it comes to the details?
I suspect this comes down to the idea that he doesn't want people to think he has a plan. I think that he thinks he wants them to think that they're playing with a loaded gun and he's capable of doing anything at any moment. And
he said that, right? I mean, that's said that. Like, yeah. I'm not going to tell anybody what I'm doing.
Wait. Right, but that doesn't mean
but
he has
that
a plan
with the bullying,
behind it.
That with the bullying, that with getting people scared of him, which is what bullies want to do, is what he thinks is going to be a successful presidency.
But it's like a broken traffic light. We have no idea what the real plan is. And that's the problem that when we communicate with our allies, that they can't even identify what we're looking to do. And
I think I have an idea of what the real plan is. The real plan is to get everybody frightened of him. So there you are.
So we got a letter from John who says, Alan is right. The American evangelicals are driving this. The American evangelicals drive almost all of U.S. Middle East foreign policy. They require Israel for their end time fantasy, which also requires war in the Middle East.
And what is the end time fantasy? He's right. The end time fantasy is that there will be a Christian takeover, a return of the Christians to Jerusalem. And that's what it is. It is not for no reason at all that Jerusalem has been a tremendously attractive place for the evangelicals to go. And there is a rhetoric that is surrounding it, whether we like it or not.
We should note that the president has sent a video address, which is being played now at the opening of the embassy in Jerusalem. And when more details come out about that and we get a transcript, we'll talk a little bit more about it. We just have a minute before we go over to a break, though. I mean, of course, the scariest thing about this are the deadly protests and how long that will continue.
Oh, those are going to continue.
Right.
And people are willing to give up their lives. There is no question about it. They may be misguided. They may be wrong. They may think the end game is that the Jews should give back Israel to the people who used to occupy there. But if you gave them the lie detector test I'm always talking about, they would believe it, and they would say it's worth giving up our lives for, and we will do that. But on the other hand, that ain't going to happen.
Well, the one thing I will say is that even with the president's address to Israel right now, it was pre-recorded. So imagine if it was actually live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they're not going to do that.
No.
Not with this guy. No.
Why didn't Pence go?
Oh, that's interesting.
I was surprised that Pence did not go.
Because Trump Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner were?
And Mnuchin.
Yeah, right.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll talk more about this, and we'll welcome your letters as well. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Joe Bonilla, Teresa Bourgeois, we welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back. How many WMCers does it take to turn on a television set? All right. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have a lot of letters, quite a stack there. Alan's going to go through them. We welcome your letters, panel@WAMC.org. Go, Alan.
We can always use more, and you're always welcome to write if you haven't written before. I mean, we get the regulars, and they're always welcome, but we'd love to hear from you if you haven't.
Want to hear a little story? I mean, I know you're in on this because I copied you on this.
Of course.
A listener called in and said, I write at least 3 or 4 times every day, and Alan hasn't read my letter yet. And I said, well, maybe the problem is that you write every day. we'll pick them, but we get so many letters. We try to get people who haven't written yet.
Give them a chance.
Give them a chance.
Yeah. And by the way, as long as we're on that subject, and
yes,
it's a very good one, Joe. You know, there are two kinds of letters. There are what we call substantive short letters, insightful, and then there are Trump is a bum letters. Yeah. But you know, calling names is not the kind of letter that we're likely to. Right. We want something that will add to the discussion. Is that a fair analysis?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would say so.
So fair.
So fair.
The most fair.
Yeah.
Okay. So Jill says, East Jerusalem. I understand the Palestinians want part of the city, East Jerusalem, as their capital if a two-state solution is ever reached. What I don't understand is, how does moving our embassy to Jerusalem threaten the eastern part of the city becoming their capital in the future? The rest of the city would still be Israel's capital, wouldn't it? Thank you. And that's from Jill. Now, this is a very interesting letter, and I'll tell you why. Because what we are seeing is, there was a stalemate. Come on, everybody. There was a stalemate. You know, two state solution. You step off the line, and somebody is going to say, "No, that's no good." Now Trump comes along. He thinks that if he does this, he opens this whole thing up. But of course, he's not. You know, he's creating this chaos and this havoc that is going on right now. Look, if you say to the Arab population, the Palestinian population, will you settle for anything less than full restoration of all your land in Israel? They will say no. If you say to them, okay, do you think Hamas, do you think Israel should be driven into the sea? The answer is yes, they should. This isn't their land. The Israelis say, no, no, we were here first. What are you talking about? We go all the way back, Bible and everything else. Okay, so we see that this is now a situation which is so fluid that it defies any kind of approach that will make it better. Teresa? How do you make it better?
Well, I'm not an expert at all in this very complex part of the world, so I can't give you an answer to how it will make it better. But those who are expert, as I've read, think that this decision is one that's certainly to make it worse.
Yes.
And that it wasn't, it's a decision that over time might be appropriate, but not now, because the right compromises have not been made and the details been worked out to make it an appropriate decision. And those are Republicans and Democrats alike. That's my understanding.
Right. So we talked about this last week, Alan, about the relationship between Trump and even the Congress and Senate with Netanyahu. So Netanyahu has his own issues.
He is on the precipice of going to jail himself.
Okay, and I just want to forward that if he were to,
yes,
be removed.
Yeah,
would it change anything dramatically?
Who knows? I think. Look, I talk to my Israeli friends and others who say Netanyahu is really going to end up in jail over all of these accusations about his greed and all the rest of it. But one thinks, if you're an Israeli voter and you have a choice between somebody who says, let's compromise, the word that Teresa just used, and let's give away more, one wonders if such compromise is possible. We did see Rabin, right?
Right.
And we saw what happened. I'm sorry, go ahead.
But let me ask you, this is a question.
Of course.
So Netanyahu, of course, this is what he wanted. But there are prominent leaders in Israel who did not think this is the right time for this, are there not? I mean, there was an agreement within the leadership in Israel that this is the right move. This was the move that Netanyahu wanted, but not everyone. Is that correct?
Well, I think I want to go back to... I can't give you a yes or a no on that. I want to go back to what Joe just said and, you know, ask, is how much of what Trump does is to divert attention from Mueller? How much of what Netanyahu does is an attempt to divert attention from his own?
And how many people are dying today because of that?
Well, that's right.
You know, I mean,
maybe that's
too harsh of a thing to say, but...
And Teresa, look at history. That's the way it's always been. You can go to Hitler, you can go to Mussolini, you can go to the guys in the United States who were the Father Coughlins and the rest of them who were doing all of that in the 1930s and trying to divert attention and take advantage politically for themselves. It's always been so.
But in addition to diverting attention, in fairness, this is Trump, I think, you know, his supporters, Adelson at the lead and others, this is something that they wanted. And so I think it has the benefit of diverting attention, but it also is something that his supporters wanted and he was committed to. And whether I don't don't know Jared Kushner's influence on this as well. Remember, he was going to be essentially the Middle East envoy, which
he's
going to
be the
now.
Peacemaker.
Right.
Right, the peacemaker.
The fixer. Yeah.
But I go back to this is a complicated section of the area of the world. I don't understand it, but I do know that Republicans and Democrats alike over time have said that this is not, in fact, Trump points to that, but they have said this is not the right thing to do for exactly why what we're seeing today. And it's just heartbreaking.
Okay, let's go back to some more letters. Is
please,
that okay, Joe?
Please.
Please. Claude says, if Trump and many of his warmongers had served in the military, they would be more cautious about possibly starting a war.
That would be the hope, at least, you know, having that experience. But that goes back to, again, you have a lot of these guys that they're all in it for exactly the money and then the whole military-industrial complex. I really don't see there being really any sort of responsibility in their actions.
And Trump and his kids did not choose to go to war to do this. Okay, Patrick says, dear panel, can you please discuss whether or not the president needs approval from Congress to use military force in Iran? Thanks. I'm very worried that he'll act on his own, and you should be. That's right, Patrick. There is a clause in the Constitution that says you want to declare war, you got to go to the Congress. Harry Truman said, what we were doing in Korea was not war. It was a military action, whatever
meant. That's right. Peacekeeping measures,
Yeah. So there's a point at which Congress has to put its foot down and say, no, you have to come to us if you're going to do this. There is no indication that any modern president is doing that. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Patrick. And then over to Ben, who says, Jared Kushner and Ivanka are attending the opening. What about negotiation for a two-state solution? Arabs and Jews once lived side by side. And that's from Ben.
That's what we need.
Richard says, North Korea. Question. Once North Korea gives up their nuclear option, what negotiating power do they have left? One word, China.
Right.
China is going to be the protector. China is going to say to the United States, look, there's a whole set of negotiations that are going on now that the American people do not know about. We don't know. We don't know who's talking to who. We do know that Kim is talking to Xi. And we do know that our people have been talking, Pompeo and others have been talking to the North Koreans and the South Koreans. And we do know that the South Koreans have been talking to the North Koreans. But what is being said and what guarantees are being given here, we don't know.
Well, I think also it's an eternity between now and the proposed summit at the end of June. It's an eternity. A lot can happen at a time. And my feeling is I would like for obviously the summit to happen. But then again, you know, we've seen this president at the very last minute pull away from a meeting just because
it's
of
true.
What, right.
But you know what? In this case, I think the deal is set.
See,
yeah,
I think
so much on right.
I mean, I think the
so
deal.
Right.
I think the deal is set.
I think they'll have the meeting. They'll declare something, and then the people will have to go back and work out the details. And it's in the details that there'll just be a long, long delay.
Right.
Because that's been the North Korean, process in the past.
Delay.
They talk, they agree, they delay, they renege 2 or 3 years later. But the person in all of this that I find so impressive is Moon Jae-in from South Korea. Mm. I think that he seems to really be negotiating or threading a very complex needle.
All right, let's do a letter or two and then we'll take a break and come back to more letters.
Richard says, North Korea. We did that. Thank you, Richard. And thank you to Andrew, who says Israel. Hello, panel. Trump's support of moving Israel's embassy seems to be more of an issue of opportunity, seeing that historically a move like this may have genuinely destabilized the region. Of course, there will be protests and violence, but not so much and that it will be any kind of deterrent that it would have been in the past. Andrew from Athens.
I don't understand what that means. Do
well,
you understand that?
Yeah, I think I understand it. He's saying...
deterrent from what? I just don't understand.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. He says he's saying he's going to get away with it right now. It's an opportune moment for him to do it. That's what he's saying. Okay. And Ellen says, "Bravo, Alan. I agree with you regarding Israel, but I see Trump's embassy move as even more nefarious. I believe all of this, in Jerusalem embassy, the Charlottesville death, the upswing of anti-Semitism, and his newly signed Holocaust property law, all point to an intentional acts of violence against Jews and Israel. I know this sounds a bit extreme. I know this sounds extreme, but I believe that Trump is evil and should never be given the benefit of the doubt." Jim says, theocracy. It may be democracy on paper, but Israel is a theocracy in practice. You cannot implement better policies if all the voting power is held by the ultra-Orthodox. A solution is available, but no one will be elected to ensure one of the fundamentalists control the process, which they do in the meantime, genocide.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll have more letters and more discussion. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Joe Bonilla, Teresa Bourgeois, and your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Getting a fair number this morning, which is good, and we go back to Alan.
Okay. Dear Alan, please consider your choice of words, says Roshni. You said that some of the protesters may believe they can return to the land to the people who occupied it before. The Palestinians did not occupy the land. They lived there. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, I said that. I said specifically that the Israelis have claimed having been there first. It's all a bunch of silliness, but not so silly because there's so many implications to it. Sorry about that, Roshni. Ruth says, Jerusalem. Hi, panel. I missed the beginning of today's program, so you may have covered this. I just saw a picture of the embassy opening, and there are Trump signs all over. Trump, not USA. Is Jerusalem now a campaign stop? And will our embassy have the name Trump on it? I couldn't believe it. Do you have any more info? No, but that's right. Obviously, the Israelis know what they're doing, and Netanyahu knows what he's doing. There are thank you, President Trump signs all over Jerusalem.
No, it's necessarily absolutely a political stop. And you'll look at this more or less in the lens of obviously shoring up things for the midterm.
Yep. Joy says, panel, could it be that there is a chance for the big money Trump backers to clean up if they are allowed first crack in North Korea? Let me read that again because I didn't quite get it myself. Panel, could it be that there's a chance for the big money Trump backers, to clean up if they are allowed first crack in North Korea?
Well, I think that's interesting in that you've heard a lot of over the weekend with Bolton interviews and others. They were asked, well, if this works out, is the U.S. going to give aid to North Korea? And he kept talking about trade. We're going to open up trade opportunities.
But no real aid.
He didn't say no aid, but when asked about aid, he kept talking about trade, and maybe that's what they're talking about, open up new business.
Karen, who identifies herself as an Israeli from Albany, writes the following letter. Embassy, it is a terrible day for anyone who cares about ever seeing justice in the Middle East. Trump's decision is reckless, but has done little other than formalizing the reality of Palestinians living under Israeli occupation for so many years who live as second-class citizens. Under international law, Palestinians from Gaza who are refugees displaced by law have, and this is in capital letters, every right to demand the return to their homelands. Not all Jews support the move of this embassy. Jewish Voice for Peace is the fastest growing Jewish organization in the country with chapters throughout the WAMC listening area, and they strongly oppose this disastrous move. Again, Karen, an Israeli from Albany.
All right. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and thank you for the letters we have received so far.
There was an interesting tweet about this. I read that Jared Kushner, in his speech, apparently he said, quote, "We have shown the world that the United States can be trusted." But as Steve Inskeep of NPR points out, his father-in-law, by withdrawing from the Iran deal, showed the world that the U.S. cannot be trusted.
Yeah, and that's the father-in-law who went to jail.
No. Trump is the father-in-law.
That's his father. The father.
So, you know, he's talking about how much Trump can be trusted, but in fact just reneged from the Iran deal, showing that he couldn't be.
And one other thing, and that is, this is a mess, and none of the other international partners are participating in this. You know, Netanyahu's out there this morning planning for planning to and asking other nations to move their embassies to, and there's deafening silence.
Right.
Let's go to a story that Teresa mentioned earlier that we would take up, and we'll take it up now, which is as China and the United States go toe-to-toe on trade and maneuver ahead of a historic North Korea meeting next month, an unlikely obstacle has emerged. A second-tier Chinese electronics maker, ZTE, this from the New York Times. The company said last week that it had halted major operating activities after being penalized by the United States Department of Commerce. On Sunday morning, President Trump surprised many in Washington when he indicated a willingness to rethink the punishment. He also appeared to walk back from brinkmanship that has threatened the U.S. trade talks with China. In a tweet, Mr. Trump said he was working with his Chinese counterpart, President Xi, to prevent the collapse of the company, which employs 75,000 people.
It's a lot of people, right? What a mess. Can you imagine this guy, Trump, sitting in the Oval Office? Somebody comes in and says, Chief, we have a big problem. President Xi is really angry at us, and he holds the key to North Korea and whether or not this is going to work or not. And I don't know what to do. And Trump looks up from his papers and says, okay, let's go back on that. That's the way this guy operates.
But it just seemed it's very interesting. Now there's this sudden significant concern over Chinese jobs when his whole entire campaign, his whole political persona has been built upon shoring up and creating American jobs. And for him to say, well, too many jobs in China have been lost. But the other part of it, too, is that there's such a interconnectivity between the American and Chinese economy when it comes to this manufacturer. ZTE is a manufacturer of low-cost Android phones. And what we're finding now is that millions of users can't even get updates on their phones right now because of this one issue. So for folks who, trying to update Facebook or Snapchat or Instagram on their phones, they can't update.
Yeah, interesting.
I'd like to, if any listeners use these phones, I'd be interested in hearing from them and what their experience has been. But this, I kind of dug into this issue last night because I didn't know a lot about it, and I'm fascinated by it now because I thought that I remembered, and back in February, the U.S. intelligence agencies, the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, raised concerns, said that those consumers who use these phones in the U.S. should be warned about these companies, about two smartphone makers, ZTE and a second one, about how secure these were and interference. Go ahead, Al.
I was holding up my hand to say, yes, you're right.
Right, about interference. Yeah. So that's number one. Number two, the Commerce Department, the U.S. Commerce Department, sanctioned this company because of its sales to Iran. And so at the same time, the president of the United States is saying to our allies in Europe, no, you can't do business with Iran. This company had violated the barriers against doing business with Iran previously and therefore had been sanctioned. But now unilaterally the president says, okay, we're going to lift that. And he had said he was going to crack down, be tough on trade deals. And this is particularly around electronics and around technology and use of technology. And he backs down on this one right away.
Yeah, it's a little interesting. But also it speaks to, we've had so many challenges with intellectual property law when it comes to Chinese manufacturers and South Asian manufacturers with this. So I don't know if that plays into it, but also, you look at the deal that Wisconsin made with Foxconn, too. So you look at, is this something that's more of a more Machiavellian way of looking at this, where basically maybe it's Foxconn in the mix here, but that could be seen as well.
Right. Well, is there a threat or isn't there a threat? So if you say one of the reasons we have to be careful about these Chinese products is they may be listening in on us.
Yeah.
So then you say the day after, oh, forget that.
Oh, yeah. Don't even think about it. Right.
So 2012, the House Intelligence Committee cited a potential security risk over close ties to the Chinese government with the use of these phones. In February, FBI Director Chris Wray, and I'm reading this, said, quote, we're deeply concerned about the risks of allowing any company or entity that is beholden to foreign governments that don't share our values to gain positions of power inside our telecommunications network. This is in issuing the warning about not using these. Now, the flip side is that Qualcomm is set to lose millions of dollars on this. And also the Australians are upset because their major telecommunications company in Australia buys its phones from this company, and they rebrand it under their name, and so they can't get the phones. Corning makes the glass for these phones. Yep. They say they'll be fine with this, but Qualcomm is set to lose a lot of money.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation, and we welcome your letters, and all you have to do is write to us, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok is here, Joe Bonilla, Teresa Bourgeois, a vibrant conversation which will continue in our next and our last half hour. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday morning, 6 minutes past 10 o'clock. Alan Chartok, Joe Bonilla, and Teresa Bourgeois making up the panel this morning. We're thrilled to have you as a part of our group as well. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan has some letters, and then we'll move on to some other stuff.
Thanks, Joe. Leslie says, could China be setting us up? Is it possible China and North Korea will give Trump a diplomatic win to help him get reelected, realizing Trump will hurt the U.S. in the long term? That furthers China's ascendancy. It seems far too many people are relying on our institutions to save us from Trumpism. I don't share that faith. When our system was devised, the tools of propaganda were not as powerful.
Yep. All right.
Got a point. Clifford says, do you think these Gaza Strip protests and deaths will adversely affect Donald's chances of getting the Nobel Peace Prize? It certainly couldn't help.
No, it wouldn't help. But yeah, again,
the whole
no.
What?
It's a little premature to be talking about the Nobel Peace Prize.
Nancy says, roundtable question. Hi, panel. This is my first question sent, even though there are always many written in my head. If you're going to ask Palestinians if they want all Israelites to fall into the sea, you must also ask if they want all Palestinians out of their country forever. Thank you from Nancy. And Chaz says, Israel there first. Native Americans were in the USA first, so shall we give them back their land? Ask Trump and family that question.
Yep.
All right.
All good letters. Thank you for writing.
We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We move on to other topics, and we look at a Washington Post article regarding the Mueller probe.
That was one of the best articles, Joe, that I have ever read in my entire life.
It's written by five reporters, yeah. And it's basically a summary of where we are, and the headline is, Buckle Up, as the Mueller probe enters its second year, Trump and allies go on war footing. So the grand jury witnesses arrive one by one at the windowless room in the federal courthouse on Constitution Avenue in downtown Washington. They are struck first by how commonplace the setting feels, more classroom than courtroom, two witnesses said. One of special counsel Robert Mueller's prosecutors stands at a lectern. The jurors, diverse by age and ethnicity, are attentive and take notes. The questioning is polite yet aggressive, surprising witnesses with its precision, and often accompanied by evidence, including text messages and emails displayed on large, old-fashioned overhead projectors. The Mueller operation, like the former Marine Corps platoon commander who leads it, is secretive and methodical. 10 blocks west in the White House, President Trump combats the probe with bluster, disarray, and defiance as he scrambles for survival. The probe is a steaming locomotive, already delivering indictments or guilty pleas involving 19 people in three companies while soliciting interviews with most of the president's closest aides and outside associates. Players have departed, including most of Trump's original legal team, while others have joined, including most recently Cohen, adult film actress Stormy Daniels, and her attorney Michael Avenatti. So the article goes into great detail about basically the portrait of the president's handling of this and that of the special counsel. There are wonderful details in this article, but nothing overly surprising in the sense of, as I just read, that Mueller is a straight arrow. He is running this with incredible precision. And then on the other side, you have Trump, who is just reacting.
Joe, what we haven't seen here, is any kind of accurate insight into what Mueller is doing. We don't know that. What we do know is that this wonderful team has gone out and interviewed every single person who has appeared before a grand jury and said, what are they asking you? And you have a pretty good idea. Now, if we have a pretty good idea from the Washington Post, then Trump has a pretty good idea. I've been saying it from the beginning. What would you do if you were Trump or a rat in a corner? I'm not saying Trump is a rat. I'm saying or a rat in a corner in the corner. I'm trying to defend myself there.
I haven't gotten yourself.
Before I get the rats. Okay, yeah. All right. And by the way, De Blasio.
I didn't say got yourself in a corner. Yeah. I said in a pickle.
Yeah. And by the way, what?
De Blasio is having a lot of trouble with the rats, the real rats.
Yeah.
Forget that. I divert.
You don't want to hear about the Boston
story. No. Okay. But. Here we have a pretty good insight into the kinds of questions that are being asked. For example, did you fire the FBI director because you were trying to take the pressure off yourself, on the quote Russian thing, which you told the Russians? Sounds like obstruction of justice to me. And it sounds like that's where they're going to go, where he's going with all of this. So if you were Trump, what would you do? You know what you would do, because we know enough about this guy. You would say, damn the torpedoes. Come on, Rudy, let's fire him. That's what they're going to do.
Well, I guess for me is that, you know, looking at this, and I know myself.
Oh, one last thing. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Joe. One last thing. One of the great quotes I read in the paper is that the Republican leadership, Ryan and McConnell, have talked about not firing the special prosecutor. Nevertheless, the analysis in the paper is they don't want him fired, or they say they don't want him fired, but they won't do anything about it if he is fired.
Right.
Well, and also they won't, and I don't know what exactly they could do, but any attempts to put mechanisms in place that would prevent him from firing.
They won't do it.
They have not done that.
That's right, Joe.
They have not done that.
You're on the money.
But here's the thing, you know, given the complexity of this investigation and the incredible impact this has upon the presidency in the country, at the same time, the public consciousness and the patience that the American public has in this issue, at some point, Mueller and his team do need to have some sort of public disclosure over the summer or something like that before the midterms because of the impact that
Who
there
says?
Were. Well, I just feel that, you know, you can only go for so long. Now we've now reached the 1 year anniversary. How much longer basically until somebody says, well, what are you actually looking into? So there has to be some point of that.
I want to take issue with it because I know that's what people are saying.
Sure.
And particularly that's what Republicans, that's what they're trying to push. But the fact is, 19 people have been indicted, 3 companies. So that's how they're talking. They're speaking with their indictments.
Yeah, but to Joe's point, Teresa, for whatever it's worth, the American people are showing some marginal signs of getting tired of the Mueller investigation.
I absolutely agree with that. I think
so. Does he do what he is trained to do, which is pursue it, forget about the politics,
right,
or does he get political about this? And there are those people who think that what he's going to do is say we're suspending the investigation until after the midterms are over.
But I just think there needs to be some pushback because it's becoming the commonly understood narrative that's a year into it and nothing's happened. But it's a year into it and 19 people have been indicted. But 2 observations that I have. One is we're 176 days from the election, and that one thing we know for sure is the Russians interfered with the U.S. elections, and that's what set all of this off. And there was a February article in Wired magazine that talks about how even then it was too late and little had been done. They talked about in the roughly 2 years since the first signs that Russia interfered, some states have, and I'm quoting here, some states have made an earnest effort to secure the vote. The overall landscape looks troubling. In some cases, it's too late to fix it this year. So I think that that's one thing that concerns me, is not enough attention has been paid to the details of that. And the other thing that concerns me is, I guess to your point, Joe, is that the rhetoric by the Trump team has been very effective in getting people, undermining the investigation and undermining people's confidence in our basic rule of law and our mechanisms for that, the FBI and all our investigative options.
I will refer you to an earlier letter where somebody profoundly said, this is an age of propaganda. And if there is one thing that Trump is good at, it's diffusing things with propaganda.
Well, I think it's that, but it's also the amount of the lack of patience that folks have and the attention span that they have. You know, we went from a 24-hour news cycle to a 280-character news cycle. So that's really where I'm getting at with this. I think, and I understand, you know, how serious this is, and obviously we want to make sure everything is done right. And to your point, Teresa, obviously there has been work being done, but at the same time there have been outcomes. Right, there have been outcomes, but I think what people are looking for is something larger than just obviously the trickle of outcomes that have come out.
19 indictments.
All right, let's move on to some other things. We'll try to get in as many topics as we can in our last few moments. And let's go to the Betsy DeVos story. So the Education Department unwinds unit investigating fraud at for-profit schools. So members of a special team at the Education Department that have been investigating widespread abuses by for-profit colleges have been marginalized, reassigned, or instructed to focus on other matters, according to current and former employees. The unwinding of the team has effectively killed investigations into the possibly fraudulent activities at several large for-profit colleges where top hires of Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, had previously worked. During the final months of the Obama administration, the team had expanded to include a dozen or so lawyers and investigators who were looking into advertising, recruitment practices, and job placement claims at several institutions, including DeVries Education Group. The investigation into DeVries ground to a halt early this year. Later in the summer, Ms. DeVos named Julian Schmoke, a former dean at DeVries, as the team's new supervisor. So, hello, Fox. We want to put you in charge of the hen house.
Of that, there is no question.
Right. Enjoy your new gig.
This is disgusting. And this really is taking over the White House for the profit. Remember that I hate to mention his name here today, but Eric Schneiderman did get a judgment against Trump for Trump University, and he had to pay for that. And what do you think this stuff is? This is the same stuff. So here we have this very ignorant woman who is the Secretary of Education, knew nothing when she came in, knows nothing now, but who is carrying the mail for those people who are going to make out like bandits as a result of disbanding this unit.
So let me ask, I'm sorry, Joe, to interrupt, but I just want to have a quick question about, well, go ahead, and then I'll...
Well, you know, it's interesting, too, because of who Betsy DeVos is married to, Rich DeVos, who, you know, his family owned Amway, which was the largest multi-market, you know, multi-level marketing scheme in the country. And when you look at that connection between Amway and the DeVos family and DeVry, it's not surprising where you would have...
It's DeVry. I apologize.
And it's not surprising that you would see this dismantling of the investigative structure of that within the Department of Education.
Went to school with a kid with the exact same name, but it was pronounced DeVry, or DeVry. Right?
DeVry?
Yeah.
Ernie DeVry.
He was an odd kid. Anyway. I'm sure he's doing fine.
Wait for the letter.
I'm sure he's doing fine now.
Wonderful. Not in the best possible way.
He's probably the head of some for-profit college, so yes. We're doing fine. All right, so tell me about for-profit colleges. What does that mean?
That means somebody owns them. It means they're not for-profit.
Right.
It means that, you know, if you go to a state university, these are basically government-run, but there are...
Like Princeton, Harvard, Yale, those are all not-for-profits. Yes.
Yeah. And think about it. These are personally owned machines. We know that we have seen them in the past. We know that, for example, there are prisons which are owned for profits. That's what this is.
When they're and they're also publicly traded, as the case of the University of Phoenix and ITT, you know, years ago.
Yes.
And the problem is that, you know, some of these function, you know, appropriately, but far too many of them do not, and they make false claims to those who turn to them to improve their skills and find work. And those people are often hurt financially by them, but also the taxpayers are hurt by them. I know when I was working for the House, the Senate Committee on Labor and Human Resources, we were looking into these kinds of universities. They've grown tremendously since then, But often, that you wouldn't get the education that was promised, you wouldn't get the outcomes that were promised, you wouldn't get the jobs that were promised, yet the funding, the federal education funding would be used. So taxpayers are cheated by these universities. Those who attend them are cheated by these universities. There had been investigations into them. They've not only stopped the investigations, but they've brought the people who did these things into the education department. This is a real serious problem.
There is breaking news of coming out of the Supreme Court. The court has ruled that states can legalize sports gambling, striking down a 1992 federal law.
Huh. Well, a blow for states' rights. You know, that court goes back and forth on this question as to whether the states have any rights. In the old days, the Republicans were all, it's all about states' rights.
They said they can legalize.
I think so. Isn't that what you said, Joe?
Yeah, they can legalize sports gambling.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We have about 2 minutes. I would like to quickly talk, because we did not at the beginning, and we should have, talked about the lockbox.
Oh, yeah. We better do that.
Okay.
Because, Joe, there's no way that this radio station can survive without money. Let's face it. So we came up with, years ago, and you had a big part in it, Joe, coming up with the idea of a lockbox. People would give and at their own pace, and we would try to get halfway in the drive with the lockbox. Now, one person just wrote me and said, it's really not fair because you go on and you talk about the lockbox. And so that's really the same thing as a fund drive.
No, we're not taking
any programs off the air. We're using the 30-second spots that we have available to us, and we're doing it that way. But there is no question that the money is needed, and we have to have it, and we all know that. So the lockbox is so easy. You could go right now to WMC.org, press on the lockbox, and put something in. Right, Joe?
Absolutely. Now, the way this works is the fund drive officially begins June 4th, so every dollar we make now is less than we have to make when we start the drive officially.
Right.
Now, not to put pressure on all of you, however, the last drive a year ago, not the last drive, but let's say a year ago, and we usually try to compare June to June.
We do.
We did that in a day and 2 hours, I think.
Yeah. I think there are many people in this country who really are sort of getting depressed, as if they're carrying, the weight of the world on their shoulders. But you do have WAMC, everybody. That's what it has. And that's what we are. And you know it, and we've been here with you, and this program itself has so many people listening to it for exactly that reason. So I'm just imploring all of the 500,000 people who listen to this radio station every month to go to WAMC.org and say, Alan, you're right. Let me do something, even if it's $5 or $100, whatever I can do, I'm going to do right now. I'm depending on everybody to understand what this radio station is.
All you have to do is go to WAMC.org. There is a box there that says Help the Lockbox. Donate today, and you can just click on that, and it will take and we will take care of you. If you have any problems, call the main number, and they'll take care of you as well. WAMC.org. My thanks to Teresa and Joe. Thank you. I reached you both late in the day after a series of cancellations, and you were nice enough to come in today, and I appreciate that very much. Alan, thank you also. I begged you to come on, and I appreciate that very much. And we'll be back after this.